Like, who waits around for a salesperson to email them about a problem they have? It's like, I got hemorrhoids. I'm not waiting for somebody, the hemorrhoids cream salesman, to call me. I'm going to CVS and I'm getting freaking hemorrhoid cream. Or I'm Googling it, itchy butt. What the hell do I do? It's like, why are we still doing this in corporate America?
Welcome to the How Leaders Think podcast, a show that transforms you by renewing your mind and giving you new ways to think. I am your host, Kenny Lang, and with me today is the Pete Caputa. He is the CEO of Databox, and he is on a mission to help companies improve performance by making it easy for them to discover insights in their data, which is desperately needed. He was formerly the VP of sales at a little-known company called HubSpot, where he built the HubSpot partnership program into $115 million in annual recurring revenue. Welcome to the show, Pete.
Kenny, yeah, pleasure to be here. Nice to connect again. Look forward to the conversation. Thanks for the kind intro.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Well, we've obviously gotten to interact a lot more over the last year or so, but always a huge fan of what you're doing and love the data and the insights. But I'm curious, what is on your mind?
What's on my mind? Well, what isn't on my mind?
New
year, right? New ideas, new beginnings. Also, new challenges, peak. Of course. So. But if I had to narrow it down, you probably would guess, but I'm always obsessing over how to build partnerships. I look at partnerships as like one of the highest leverage things that a business can have. And building partnership programs can really enable a company to scale revenue faster and profitably. And so that's what my mind is always thinking about. How do we grow more quickly and more profitably?
Which I don't think there's any sane, I'll say qualify this sane person in the world who would disagree with that notion of like, let's scale, faster, more profitably, all those sort of things. Just for the listeners at home, when you're talking about partnerships, I think a lot of people may go immediately to like legal partnership, like maybe running things together, like, hey, don't be a solopreneur or something like that. There are some business leaders out there that would probably discourage you from having a business partner. Just right. There's horror stories, of course. When you talk about partnership, how are you defining it and thinking about it today? And maybe was it different when you were kicking things off at HubSpot?
Yeah. So yeah, I'm not referring to like, go get yourself a business partner. If you think you're capable of starting a business and building it on your own, I think then that is the ultimate thing to do because it gives you optionality and control and all that. So I'm not advocating like, you need to go get yourself a business partner and split your equity 50-50 or whatever. When right. I say partnerships, but for your listeners, what I'm talking about is when one company decides to partner with another in order to do something together. And when I talk about building partnership programs, I'm talking about one company that builds a program that allows them to sign on lots and lots of partners. So that's what I've built at HubSpot. We built that at Databox. I've advised other SaaS companies to do the same, Panadoc, Drift, InCycle, a bunch of other SaaS companies that were doing similar stuff. So that's when I say partnerships, and specifically with software as a service companies. There's a massive opportunity to go out there and partner with professional service organizations and help each of those professional services organizations, but in a very scalable way that allows both companies to grow more reliably, grow more profitably.
Gotcha. So it's really, it's about the strategic player, strategic partnership in a way that's mutually beneficial.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. When two companies connect and
So, which could be curious if you think about the fact that, some of the companies you mentioned, obviously, I think they're benefited by having partner programs and ecosystems. But couldn't you argue like maybe more product-based companies, SaaS platforms, they can acquire customers through, you know, what you might consider more traditional marketing channels, right? Like organic content, obviously, HubSpot, you know, promoting, evangelizing inbound, until they were, I was going to say blue in the face, but probably orange in the face.
Yeah.
And paid ads and all these other channels. What is so helpful about having partners, and you mentioned the service providers, of which, you know, formerly I was a HubSpot partner and saw the benefits to my agency, but it always felt like maybe that is a more of a help to the agencies because they get to borrow on the brand equity that a larger SaaS platform or any sort of platform has in the community. What's really in it for the SaaS platforms? Like, does it really accelerate growth that much?
I'm glad you saw partnering with HubSpot at the time as something that helped you. And it seems like you still feel that way. I know many HubSpot partners do. Many Databox partners feel the same. Yes, I think there's for the professional services firm, marketing agency, consultant, there's benefit because they can kind of leverage the growth of the SaaS platform and use that to provide services to their clients. But your question is more around what's the benefit to the SaaS company when they can market more directly. And so I'm a total advocate of direct marketing for SaaS companies, not saying to forgo that. At Databox, like the majority of our growth comes from search engine optimization and a heavy investment in, in content marketing starting 7+ years ago. And so we drive a lot of our customer acquisition through that. And we also invest in product-led growth. So many of our customers find us through our SEO, sign up for free, try us out, and then upgrade on their own without even talking to anyone. So, So it's a very efficient direct funnel. The mistake, however, that I think most SaaS companies make is that they then prioritize their direct sales and scaling up their direct sales when there's actually so much more leverage in scaling up channel sales. Because if you think about it from a SaaS perspective, hiring an account executive, let's say in the US, you're going to spend more than $100,000 on hiring an account executive to take the leads that marketing generated and turn them into customers. So if you could take one of those AEs and you either tell them to go acquire 100 partners or you hand them 100 partners and each of those 100 partners brings one deal in a month or a quarter, right? That's 100 deals versus an AE, which is typically going to do 10 deals max. And so by having partners involved in the marketing and sales, generating their own leads, which are generally incremental leads, and spending the hours in the sales process necessary to bring that deal on, then that's ultimately a more efficient system. At HubSpot, you can read the 2014 IPO prospectus. And in there, they talked about three things that really enabled the business to scale and would enable the business to scale going forward. And one of them was the lower customer acquisition cost through the channel. Secondly, the higher retention rate of those customers. Because the secondary benefit for the SaaS company is that when a marketing agency selling MarTech or an accountant using bookkeeping software, reselling Xero or QuickBooks or whatever, when they implement that software product at the client and then help them learn it and help them use it, they're much more likely to be actually getting value out of the software because that professional services firm has an incentive to provide a higher level of service than the SaaS company does and charge for that time or that value in whatever it makes sense. Whereas with a SaaS company, you generally will get a much better ROI on investing in new product development and marketing with sales and customer support. Sales being third and customer support being a distant fourth because it's hard if you have, you know, one account manager with 100 or 200 accounts, they can't have in a SaaS company, they can't really have meaningful relationships. Whereas if a professional services firm is charging for the software plus say $2,000, $3,000, $10,000 a month of professional services, they have lots of incentive and lots of capability to spend a lot of time with that client, make sure that client's successful and do the work maybe even that makes the client successful. So long story short, SaaS companies can benefit from partner programs by through lower cost of customer acquisition and higher retention rate, which goes to my point earlier of growing faster and more profitably.
Gotcha. And so all of that, when you say it that way, it's like, well, yeah, duh. Okay. Well, then in your experience and your point of view, why aren't more platforms and even in some cases going into some of our one-to-one conversations about companies who are creating and espousing methodologies and those that are adopting and reselling. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could even say that's somewhat like what I'm doing with System of Soul is I didn't create the IP, but I license it. I'm trained on it and I help others adopt it and see the benefits from it. Yep. Why aren't more people going this way if it's so clear and proven that this is not just acceptable, but a really effective and efficient way to grow and scale a company on both sides of the equation?
So make sure I understand your question. What you're saying is, why don't more SaaS companies, more software companies, invest in partner programs and build out their partner programs versus what most of them do, which is invest in their own direct selling? That's what you're asking me?
Yeah, it could be SaaS. I think if there's a part 1A to that question, then I think you could extend it even into more like methodology.
All right. So you and I have talked about this before, where a methodology business, right? And System & Soul is a great example of a methodology business. I think you probably know StoryBrand is a great example.
Right.
Donna Miller wrote a book and then has a methodology on how to help companies develop their story and their positioning in the market.
Yep.
John Jantz at Duct Tape Marketing has a great one. Mm-hmm. He basically has a methodology that fractional CMOs use to go into a client and develop the strategy, marketing strategy for them. And I think HubSpot's another great example of methodology business and software business, where we wrote a book on inbound marketing and then had a marketing methodology that we taught these agencies to go and execute for their clients. So I don't think a lot of people think through methodology companies, but those are all examples of methodology companies.
Right.
And I think they're very similar to software companies. Most pieces of software have some methodology behind it. In some cases, they're simply automating a task most of the time. They're introducing a new business process or many times they're introducing a new business process that requires somebody to adopt a new methodology. And so your question is, why don't more companies, more SaaS companies or methodology companies go out and say, hey, we're going to sell through channel. We're going to sell through partners. We're going to sign up partners, certify them, et cetera. I think the first reason that they don't do it is control. In fact, there's lots of early stage software advisors who will say, don't start a partner program until you have your direct selling motion down. Because if you can't sell your product, you shouldn't expect someone else to go sell your product.
Okay.
And I think at a really early stage, that makes sense, right? At Databox, however, we chose marketing agencies as our target customer. And so that became our target customer. We sold directly to them. They use our product with their clients and we kind of sell it that way. So I don't think it's necessarily a hard and fast rule. It depends a lot on the context of the business, who you're selling to and why. Sure. But a big reason is control and observability and insight, right? If you go and say, we're going to build a partner program first and, I think the feeling is like, well, the partners are going to be selling and we don't know what they're going to say and we don't know what they're going to promise and we're not going to hear what the prospects or clients say. So how are we going to get feedback to our product team? And And so I think that lack of control and that lack of insight into the process is what discourages most software companies mm-hmm. from going out and starting with a partner program before they do their direct selling motion.
Gotcha. That seems, when you say that, it seems, in my opinion, a little short-sighted. And of course, my job here is I'm supposed to be asking you questions, but I do have opinions. Strong opinions held loosely.
All good.
We're on a vocal platform, so my opinions may get out there before I have a chance to really process them, which is fun. but it seems, you know, it's a bit of a cash grab. And of course, everybody can have their own goals. They're entitled to that. Like if your goal is like, hey, I have an idea. I think it's good. I think it's viable, but it's maybe not long-term what I want to be doing. I want to build something worthy of being acquired and integrated and have that be my exit. And then maybe in the process, I'll find the thing I'm really passionate about. I don't dismiss that. But if you're after absolute control, you know, thinking your partner, like, we don't know what they're saying, feels a little like when people talk about the quote unquote evils of remote work. Well, how do we know they're working?
Yeah. How do we know they're working? Yeah. How do we know they're not taking a nap in the afternoon? Right.
Right. Like maybe they are, but they still get a lot of shit done.
Exactly.
Right.
I think a little bit. I do think there's good, generally good advice that if like you got to go sell your product 10-100 times before you should ask someone else to sell it. And the first thing that I always tell companies who are building a partner program to do is build a training and certification program. And in that training program, you have to teach your partners how to market, sell, and service clients. So if you haven't done that yourself 10-100 times, like it's really hard to go and say, here's how you should do it. And with credibility, teach people how to do that. So I do think it's important that you get that business started. Like, I don't know who started System in Seoul, but I'm guessing that they've had plenty of experience building, you know, operating models inside businesses and influencing and leading teams. They've done it a bunch of times. And so when they wrote the methodology out, there was credibility there. They probably also still do some amount of consulting themselves to keep themselves active and iterating on the methodology. So I do think there's value in that. I don't think you should just like, hey, I built this really cool product and I'm pretty sure everybody's going to want to sell it. That's not like that's wishful thinking.
Right. You should probably be the first one to sell your product
exactly.
or service or whatever it is.
Right. But I do think most companies start their partner programs too late, like later than they should.
Gotcha.
And they
waited past 100, but they sold it a few thousand times.
Like, what's that?
I was going to say they, you know, it's one thing to wait for the first, you know, couple dozen times that you sell it. But if you've waited until several thousand times later, it might be a little, you fell in the other ditch.
Yeah, because the benefit that partners bring to the table is acceleration of word of mouth and acceleration of your marketing. This isn't in HubSpot's prospectus, but the reason why one of the reasons why HubSpot was so good at inbound marketing, because every time they did something, they published something, they had hundreds or thousands of people sharing it on social media. They had hundreds of people writing articles about it and linking to it. They still do. Like, it's crazy. It's thousands of people. You know, HubSpot acquired Clearbit, and LinkedIn was full for like a week of like why every HubSpot partner in the world thinks that, you know, HubSpot's going to put all the ABM tools out of business and game over for Apollo, right? Like, I think there's that army of advocates that are helping with link building, with social media reach, et cetera. And I think if you do that, if you build your direct selling motion too much, too late, or too much without having a parallel partnership program, you really miss out on that opportunity to accelerate the marketing and sales results.
Gotcha. Now, I'm curious from, in your opinion, from the other side, although, I mean, you've been on the SaaS company, the methodology side of the partner equation, but you know and have worked with, you know, at this point, probably hundreds of partners to see what they're thinking is, especially the more successful ones. What sort of advice do you give professional services firm, like an agency, like a coach or somebody else who might be leveraging a platform or a methodology or some other type of IP in their practice? How should they be thinking about, well, which ones do I bring in? Because you could bring in too many and then you're a hodgepodge, or you're a menu mm-hmm. that's way too big for it to make sense. There's no cohesive theming. What advice do you give services firms about engaging in partner programs?
So I always say to like pick a core one first. I think if you're a management consultant, like System and Soul would be a core, mm-hmm. Core methodology, core partnership to develop, right? If you're a marketing agency, you might want to pick HubSpot or ActiveCampaign or, you know, if you're a CRM, then you're going to go Salesforce or HubSpot, maybe Pipedrive. Like there, you have to pick that core platform, mm-hmm. for two reasons. One, I think you want to pick something, you know, is going to be around that you can build on. And then also you don't want to, if you're small firm, you don't want to dilute your efforts too much and you look like you're I use a term, I think it's inappropriate, but people have entrepreneurial ADHD where it's like, I have this business for 6 months and I'm like, oh, I'm going to try this new shiny object thing over here. And then you never get anywhere. And so I think it's important that you pick one and stick with it. You didn't ask this question, but I think once you pick that one thing, you still have to figure out how do you differentiate yourself from the other people who have picked that one thing. So there's 6,000 HubSpot partners. I don't know how many System and Soul consultants there are, tens of them, maybe, right?
tens of partners. 100? Yeah, I think we're 100? Somewhere between 40 and 50 as of this recording.
Yeah, so that's still a lot, right? Given the market awareness of System mm-hmm. and Soul, it's not that's a good number of people. So I think you have to pick a focus within that. I think you've picked a focus working with mm-hmm. nonprofit organizations, right?
Yep.
And so that allows you to then target who you're going after. It allows you to maybe customize the methodology a bit, at least within limits of what you're allowed to do, so that it's relevant to that target audience, mm-hmm. and allows you to say, hey, I'm that guy. I'm the one that does System and Soul for nonprofit organizations. And so I'm pretty sure that the other 49 aren't doing that, at least not as a sole focus. And therefore you can have a differentiated message. And the people that you want to work with can recognize that you work with people like them in your marketing, mm-hmm. and you can get referrals that way more easily, things like that. Right. So I think it's really important to pick that one core program and then, mm-hmm. and then pick your one core market that you're going to go after and then do that for a while.
Right. Yeah. It gives you a nice vertical and horizontal intersection of, mm-hmm. of specialization, but, it may even help you pick those ancillary methodologies or frameworks, because certain ones are more helpful to your target, whoever it is that you feel like that's supposed to be going out and helping or that resonate with you.
Yeah. Right? We at Databox, as you know, we have integrations with 100 plus different tools. So the beauty of our partner program is that there's almost no partner that's the same. Because we'll have a partner that comes in and says they're a Shopify and Klaviyo partner, right? And mm-hmm. they focus in on a specific segment of e-commerce type lifestyle, we have somebody that just does fashion. So a fashion fashion focused marketing agency that uses Klaviyo and Shopify. Now I'm sure there's more than one of them out there, but mm-hmm. that agency is very different than the HubSpot partner. We have another partner, Big C, run by a woman named Andy Graham. And she only works with nonprofit cultural institutions. So, and she's a HubSpot partner and does a lot of ad buys or ad management for those companies. So, and does fundraising. So I think there's one other tool that she integrates with. We have another partner that only works with large law firms. And so he's actually built integrations that we didn't even have with our product. So he can go to those law firms and say, I've built integrations and can offer you a dashboard no one else can with all of the integrations of the tools a typical law firm offers. So it almost extends every partner we have almost extends our capabilities as opposed to duplicated. There's a guy named Nick Bennett. I don't know if you know Nick. Is a consultant for agencies, and he said it's the first partner program that he's ever seen where the addition of a new partner actually brings value to all the partners because it brings a perspective and a set of experiences that others don't have.
That's interesting. I'm wondering if you could take what we've been talking about and venture over something you've been posting about quite a bit over the last several months around collaborative growth. And how that starts to the notion of partnerships influences and taps into that. Of course, you and I, we have a mutual friend, Logan, who talks a lot about, like, has his Nearbound podcast, which is, you know, floating in the same arena, so to speak, saying some similar things. Talk a little bit about, like, what collaborative growth is and how does that mesh in with your thoughts on partner programs?
Collaborative growth is a phrase that I use. I'm not the first person to put those two words together, but I use it in a very specific context.
You heard it here first, folks. We're going to do it. We're going to change Wikipedia that Pete first said it on the How Leaders Think podcast.
I'm blaming it otherwise. I'm just saying it's, you know, there are two words in the English language that are put together already somewhere. But it's this idea that marketing is saturated and it's really hard to get through to your buyer. And your buyer already has people that they follow, like, and trust. And so the best way to go to market is by partnering with those people who are known, liked, and trusted in order to reach, not just reach a larger audience, but to reach a larger audience with a message that they'll trust. And so collaborative growth is all about incorporating other people's thoughts and ideas and experience inside your content so that they feel a part of what you're doing, not just feel, but are a part of what you're doing and become your word of mouth accelerant. It also kind of comes from an angle that I don't think any of us have enough knowledge to solve most problems in the world or in our businesses. And we learn a lot more from each other if we go out and ask each other questions and do research and ask and share what we're learning as we are learning it. And so this idea that you could do your marketing by sitting in your room and writing something or recording something and publishing it and it being the best it could be is like really arrogant, frankly. And that really the best marketing, best content, the best educational material will come from talking to other people, running experiments with other people, asking for people's perspective, and then publishing something that has a perspective and experience from and data even from multiple people that are in a similar experience, similar situation.
Gotcha. Yeah. Ever since I've seen, but both you and Logan following y'all on LinkedIn for a while, the more I consumed it, it just like, this makes sense. And that's something I've used to help guide me in making some of my decisions on, well, what methodologies or approaches, even the marketing stuff that I want to use is, if it starts to intuitively make sense, like, yeah, like it may not be earth shattering. Like you said, like you're not the first person to put those two words together. until we get podcast. That Wikipedia updated.
If you Google collaborative growth, it comes up with a full hour's worth of me explaining the concept. But we're
which
doing
we'll link
it,
to it in the show notes.
Podcast, right? I've listened to several of your podcasts with other guests where you come in and you ask them what they're thinking about and why they do that and why that's different than the other ways people think about stuff. And you're learning yourself. I'm sure you're applying some of the things you're learning, but you're not But you're also, from a marketing perspective, you're marketing yourself by saying, hey, all these smart people and I have ideas on how you should run your business. And so as the guide, right, you have insights for your prospects and clients that you're learning from these other people as you go. And you're not just sitting here saying, I learned everything I needed to know, you know, in college, and you should listen to me. It's like, no, like if we're not learning on an ongoing basis, then we're not really learning, right? Because things change, especially in marketing, changes so fast.
That'll preach. You just revealed my big secret on how I'm doing all this. So, man, we'll see if I get any viewers after this episode. I'm sure I will. But the thing that has struck me about it as I've started to try to engage in it was I felt a tremendous weight lifted off my shoulders from trying to be, number one, trying to be like the smartest person on a particular topic, mm-hmm. For instance, my focus on nonprofits. I don't need to know everything about nonprofits. I mean, I need to be knowledgeable and I need to be competent. Sure. Yeah. Like that's a given, but I don't need to be an expert on every single facet of nonprofits. I need to be aware of it, but it felt like I could pull in other people to say, like, well, do you know a lot about fundraising? Because I know how to sell stuff, but maybe I don't know as much about fundraising. Let's talk. Let me borrow from your brain and borrow from this person who really understands grants. Like, I just started diving into that, and that is a cluster to end all clusters that I've discovered. I'm almost done watching all 9 seasons of Suits, so I might as well have graduated law school. But I don't know that I'm ready to wade into the legalese that's in some of these grants. But I loved it because I didn't have to carry that weight. And it also turned a lot of people into allies instead of competitors. Like, I've got to own everything, which, to be honest, when I was running my marketing agency, I felt like I had to sort of protect my territory. I couldn't let another person, even if they were software or a service, if they did something adjacent to me, it suddenly felt like a threat to the lifetime, you know, relationship that I could have with another client. It took that away, which was really cool. And I think at the end of it, it's to be better service to the end user or client, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's an others focused sort of mentality. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think, so I learned business networking early in my career. For a while I did, Quickstar was like the digital version of Amway, like in the late 90s, early 2000s. And so, yeah, I got introduced to Vern Hardish and, all those types of books, How to Win Friends and Influence People, Influence by Cialdini. Like, and so I got introduced to those concepts of like, the be of service to people and it'll come back to you. And then I started my own small business in the early 2000s and quickly learned that the best way for me to get my business was getting to know other business owners that were in adjacent fields and referring them. And because when I referred them, they remembered that. And then when those two people did business together and the person I referred was able to help the person, they both remembered me very kindly, like, hey, you connected us, you changed our business, you helped me accomplish this in my life. Like, I'm so grateful, right? And so that gives them interest in what I do to the point where, like, how can I help you? What do you do? Tell me what you do for people, right? And so the more that I did that and the bigger that network got, the easier it was for me to get referrals that closed quickly. And so when I joined HubSpot and we were, and like, they said, here's your leads. They just came in through this ebook, and I'd call them up and they're like, who are you? What are you calling me about? I just wanted the ebook. And I'm like, this is stupid. And so for the first like year, all I did was like call my network and say, hey, what are you doing for SEO? Do you know anyone that needs a website? Do you know how to do capture? Would like to learn how to capture leads on your website? Like, and that network that I had, like, closed more than 50% of my business. And then that's when I'm like, hey, you know what? The best thing I could probably do is work with marketing agencies because we sell software and they sell services. And then I realized, like, if I help those marketing agencies they're going to be more inclined to want to hear how we can help them, how we can help them deliver their services and all that. So all of this comes together for me, at least, in that the more you give, and the more you think about how do I help some other company grow, the easier it becomes for me to grow my businesses.
Yeah, which kind of goes back to the, you know, my assertion that trying to control everything is short-sighted. And what I hear you describe is really is sort of taking a longer view on what you're doing. Like, it may not come back to you, you know, tomorrow or next month or next quarter or something like that, but there's a positive brand affiliation with your name or your company or what you did.
Yes. That
can pay off. And you do enough of that, it gets into what the Zig Ziglar quote of, if you spend your life helping enough people get what they want, you won't have to worry about getting what you want.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And which, I think it's really hard for people. I think it's really hard for people that are either like just getting their business started or really early in their career for them to grasp that. But like, the sooner somebody can grasp that in their career, the impact of that behavior just compounds like crazy in terms of where you're at and your, like, how fast your business can grow, how fast your career can go. So, yeah, absolutely.
Well, it's definitely, it's been helpful to me in this second business with the coaching practice. Talked to somebody earlier today that was a referral, because I spoke to someone, showed them what I was working on, and they can help me. And I actually just referred a client to them. And so it's already starting to come back around and is accelerating my growth. And it's better fit. There's better alignment. There's all a whole host of benefits that come from it. So as someone is listening to this, and maybe they are that person that you just mentioned, they're early in their career, they're still in the early days, which, you know, you could be 3 years in and still in the early days of your business.
Sure.
somebody's listening to this, they say, that's great. And that sounds huge. And, or maybe Pete must be nice. I never, you know, helped a company generate $115 million in ARR. So I don't have people knocking down my door to work with me. What's something that they could do in the next 24 hours to get started towards, you know, whether it's sourcing partnerships or just engaging that more collaborative growth, partner minded growth?
Yeah, I think I had this conversation with a consultant the other day. The consultant does probably like $450,000-$500,000 of annual revenues as a one person shop. Very, very great consultant, but really struggling still on client acquisition. He's been doing it for a while, so he's got great clients, great retention, all that. And I said to him, dude, you're so smart. You ask such good questions. You have a lot of experience in your industry. Why aren't you hosting a podcast? Interview your clients, interview prospective clients, and ask them about the stuff that you help them with, and tell those stories. So you don't have to start a podcast, but the one simple thing you could do, call up a client, call up a prospective client and say, hey, can I interview you about your story and why you're successful and the way you think and related to these topics? And then I'll either record and publish, or just record that and take notes and share a story with share a story before I publish it. But does ultimately just get in that habit of going out to your market, learning something and sharing it back with your market. If you do that as a salesperson, as a small business owner, it will have these compounding effects, because everybody's happy. The person you interviewed gets free press, gets someone else out there saying nice things about them, sharing their story, right? The people that are maybe compete with them or our collaborators with them get to learn something as well that they maybe apply in their business. And you, as the storyteller, become the expert because you are the vehicle that delivered that story to them. So it requires care and feeding, right? It's the more you do it, the better it is. It's not like you can like hire someone, outsource your SEO or your paid ads and just get leads. But if you go through that process, you'll make friends, you'll get referrals, you'll build up your credibility, and people will see your expertise because you'll share your expertise through that storytelling. That's the one thing that I recommend everyone do. Frankly, I'm amazed that salespeople still listen to their bosses and send cold prospecting emails every day. It's got to be the stupidest thing, like one of the stupidest things in the world that still happens in the business world. That, you know, these companies, they hire 50, 100 sales reps and they say, here's your list. Go email people over and over and over again until they finally relent and take your call.
Until they give in.
Yeah. When in reality, if you email 10 of those people, I guarantee, and you said, hey, could I tell your story on LinkedIn? Or could I tell you your story on my podcast? Four of them will say yes. Three of them are maybe stage shy. Three of them will be too busy or whatever and don't value it. But four of them will say yes. And those four stories that you then tell will easily pull in another 10 people that want to talk to you because you just interviewed four people in their market and learned something and shared it. So the fact that anything other than that is priority for a salesperson is ridiculous to me.
You know, I've never... I haven't modified my questions since I launched this iteration of the podcast. You just gave me an idea. In addition to the first step someone takes, I might need to say, what's something someone needs to stop in the next 24 hours? Like, we'll have a start, stop, continue aspect to this.
I'm not saying cold outreach is bad. What I'm saying is cold outreach, which amounts to, hey, I'm Joe from Company X. We help companies like yours with problem Z. Or do you have that problem? Do you want to talk to me tomorrow at 2 p.m.? Like, that is the stupidest message ever. It's like, did they not hear the freaking internet? Like, who waits around for a salesperson to email them about a problem they have? It's like, I got hemorrhoids. I'm not waiting for the hemorrhoids cream salesman to call me. I'm going to CVS and I'm getting freaking hemorrhoid cream. Or I'm Googling it. Itchy butt. What the hell do I do? It's like, why are we still doing this in corporate America?
I think we've gotten into the real interview just now. This is what we were trying to get to the whole time. So you got to dig through the layers to get to the gold. I guarantee you, I have a dozen plus messages just like that one sitting in my LinkedIn inbox. It drives me crazy. I've called a few people out on it. I try to do it politely because in some cases I'm like, they're working for somebody. They were told to do this. They're just trying to make a living. But I've told people, I was like, hey, this is not the way to get my attention. Or I'll reply to them and then they copy and pasted their response. And I said, you just ignored everything I just said for those reasons. Well, I'm not interested in talking.
How many salespeople you'll tell them something and they'll come back like a week later with the same exact message. Like literally said, hey, no, I'm not interested. And here, go over here or blah, blah, blah. And like, or it's like, if you want a half hour of my time, go do this and come back to me. And they just completely ignore it and come back with the same pitch. Like someone forgot to teach them how to initiate.
How to be human.
Yeah, exactly.
I forgot to human. I feel like
I know people don't date at bars anymore or pick up people at bars anymore, but I don't know if you're old enough to remember that, but like you wouldn't go up to someone and say, your hair's ugly. Do you want me to fix it for you? I don't like your pants. We should go to the store tomorrow. I'll buy you some new ones. Like, that's not how you pick someone up, right? Why do people continue to do business that way?
I think there are some people who are still deploying those strategies. And that's why we have dating apps and AI now. There's another mini series. We'll need to get Paul on to talk about AI dating apps or something like that. that could be a fun conversation.
There you go.
But Pete, I appreciate your time and your wisdom. And if anybody was more interested in you, the thoughts that you're sharing or Databox, collaborative growth, those sort of things, where would you send them?
So as you pointed out earlier, I'm constantly posting on LinkedIn. I've slowed down a little bit this year, trying to be spending more time on longer form content. We're putting together a free course for our partners. And so I've been working on that instead of posting every day on LinkedIn. But I am very active on LinkedIn. Pay attention to my inbox. I ignore all unsolicited pitches. But if you want to connect that way and have a meaningful conversation, I'm there. For Databox, it's real simple. It's a great domain name, databox.com. Try us out. There's a free product. We also have another free product called Benchmarks, benchmarks.databox.com, which allows a company to go and benchmark their performance against a large, very large database of companies that have opted in and anonymously allows them to benchmark across like 100 different tools that they might use and thousands of different performance metrics. I guess that'll cover it.
That, yes, we will link to all of that. The thing I was thinking about, I was thinking probably about the benchmarks piece because I know I'm getting rolling on some of that, but I can tell people hooking everything up and some of the power of the Databox platform is phenomenal because I remember early days of hooking it up and it was super helpful. You could cross things over. We were early adopters into the partner program when he started rolling it out. I was mostly in it for the badge. I just wanted the digital badge for the website.
Well, that's funny. That's why I'm finally launching a training and certification program, because I know people love those badges, especially agency owners, marketing agency owners. They love being able to say to their employees, just go get certified and get the badge, because the badge tells them that they finished the job. And lets them put it on there.
Legitimizes them.
On the website, right? Yeah.
So. That's. I'll go through it just so I can have another badge out there.
It's like you're like Boy Scouts.
It is. I'm collecting instead of. Yeah. I've got my old HubSpot. I probably still have that in my LinkedIn like history somewhere. It was like never expired. So I'm still inbound certified from 2015. I'm in the know, but. Anyways, thank you so much, Pete, for stopping by, and I hope that we get a chance to do this again. For everybody listening, we appreciate all of the views, the shares, the likes, and all of that. And if you got value from this, I would deeply appreciate you just taking a page out of this episode's playbook. Share it. Connect with it. Relate it to your story if this has been helpful to you in any way. I would be eternally grateful if you would help more people find it. But until next time, change the way you think, you'll change the way you lead. We'll see you.